Hey, what's up, everyone? Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast. On today's show, segment one, Locked On NBA expert Antonio Daniels comes through to talk about Colin Sexton. There are a few small issues with that audio, but I hope you guys tune in. It's still a really great conversation with Antonio, who I've loved having on the show, the couple opportunities we've had to do so. Second and third segments, Mark Schindler from the WNBA, from Diamond Up Rocks and others, comes through to talk about the basketball side of this Colin Sexton question. It's a really good conversation with Mark. I hope you guys enjoy it. And please subscribe, hit that rate us and review us if you have not already. By the way, I want to thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, thrilled to be joined now by Antonio Daniels, Locked On NBA expert. Antonio, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. So we're in August now. We're almost in August, I should say. We are in the past the big bulk of the NBA news, past the most of the things that will happen. Many people may ask you or talk about the KD thing, the Donovan Mitchell thing, whatever. So I'm going to ask you about Colin Sexton because I cover the Cavs and he is still out there in free agency. So when you see him still out there in RFA, no deal, very low offers, it seems like, not a lot of interest from other teams in the league. What does that tell you about where Colin's at in terms of the Cavs and just what the league seems to maybe think of him?
No, if it's really what the league thinks of him as opposed to basically the best deal that he'll have from the Cleveland Cavaliers. I tell you, one of the worst, and this is going to sound so bad, and one of the worst things that happened to Colin Sexton this past, that happened in Cleveland this past season. Having a completely different conversation, Chris, injured in the Cleveland Cavaliers headed in the wrong direction. Colin Sexton got injured, and the Cavs, you know, they're in 10th, 11th, 12th. But when that love fest happened in Cleveland, that people were talking about that was overachieving, Sexton wasn't a part of that. What that does, fair or not, it drives down your value. Drives down your value. So now, when it's time to be a free agent and free agency comes around, they're looking. These teams in this league, Chris, have a reason not to pay you. And when you're sitting back there and with the success of the Cleveland Cavaliers, you can't talk about the success of this team Sexton in the same sentence. And that's a problem. Entering free agency.
Yeah, when you were on last time, the thing you said was the Cavs, what they think of him may be determined by how they think he fits. And when right. I look at this, Antonio, and I see how this has gone, I see that they gave Darius Garland, I think, a very deserved almost $200 million extension. They paid Jarrett Allen his $100 million last year. You know, like they've gone out of their way to pay guys, I think, when they feel they deserve it. And the second thing is a little different. Obviously, you'd have to move a guy right now to clear the cap space. They're going to save the luxury tax of all that stuff. I just can't not look at this and say, this tells me I don't think they value him as much as maybe he hoped they did or anything like
that. For sure. For sure. Because the thing is, when a team values you, they will show you kind of financially compensating you for that. You spoke to two guys. You spoke to Jared Allen, Darius Garland, right? They were a part of the success in Cleveland this year. Cleveland even brought Ricky Rubio back.
Right? Yeah.
Right? A fest in Cleveland. But when a team is expecting success and overachievement, and you're not a part of it, that they don't value you. But when you've accomplished all that we've accomplished this year without you, that's the, you know, when you're injured, collectively, there's a team out there. There are many teams out there that what Colin Sexton brings, but this league, you know, your value, your worth, right? And right now, Colin Sexton doesn't have the season that he's coming off of.
When you look at his possible fit coming back to Cleveland, he gets hurt last year, but it's year two of Evan Mobley. I would expect an offensive lead from him in some capacity. Darius Garland proved he was the dude last year. That's clear. Caris LeVert is another guy that has a contract coming up. He's going to want to prove but he wasn't there when Collins there last year. Rubio's going to be coming back, obviously, off that ACL. How do you envision Colin fitting in what is going on here? Because when I look at it, and I went back and watched like him play the Nets, like the 20-point a row performance he had when KD and Kyrie and Harden played together. He can't play in that same way on a regular basis anymore. It's a different Colin Sexton that's almost going to have to exist.
Sexton, because it's a different Cleveland Cavaliers team. Mm-hmm. Brown team is different. Guys have grown. But there are two ways to learn. So you can learn through vision. So if Colin Sexton wasn't physically a part of the Love Fest, that Love Fest though, I need to figure out how I can implement my skill set success that the team is having. Because the thing that's not going to happen is in this Cleveland Cavaliers coaching staff, there's the welcome back. We are going to center our offense around you. Not when Evan Mobley is doing what he's doing. Not when you have different guys that are growing. And I'm Colin Sexton. I have to figure out just to fit in. It's not on the Cleveland Cavaliers, Garland, Allen, and these guys to figure out. I have to sacrifice and figure out how myself to join into this Love Fest. Because now you're getting your leverage back. Now you're getting your back.
One on this, Antonio. You look at where this is at. It's basically August. It doesn't seem like anything is imminent as far as him coming back or him going somewhere else. If this, to say, maybe drags on closer to camp, Is that an issue? Is that a problem? Like, how, as you, as someone who's played in the league and now is covers the league, do you look at that as a potential thing the Cavs should have to consider in this and worry about if they're trying to evaluate this?
Well, the thing is if Collins said he doesn't have options, problem for Colin Sexton and his representation to drag it. Because if the Cleveland Cavaliers, I don't know, let's say 3 years, $30 million. Alternative is, you know, well, we can retract that contract and basically tell you, and you said it, there aren't a lot of options out there right now.
Nope, none.
So if I'm Colin Sexton, it's almost, I take this money right here, it's more money than I in an NBA season throughout the course of my career, though. See, here's the problem that guys run into, Chris. It's not what I think about myself. You know why? Because I can't pay myself. Mm-hmm. Obviously, what you think about yourself is incredible lines as far as confidence, your character, and your integrity. Outside of that, it's what the league thinks, the callers, the decision makers think about you as far. So if what Cleveland is telling you right now, success that we've had this past season, we can give you $10 million a year, or you can go elsewhere. And that elsewhere, if I'm Colin Sexton, I'll be back.
It seems like, I think what has ultimately happened here is, like, DeAndre Ayton is the other notable RFA this summer. DeAndre Ayton was able to go get a massive contract offer.
That's right.
And get it. He's Sexton is not getting that from the Pacers or the Spurs, the two teams with cap space. And because he's restricted, the sign and trade stuff he needs the Cavs to help facilitate, if that's going to happen, the Cavs should be very picky, I think, about what they're going to get back in return, because they're at a point where they have to get the most they can out of someone that was a high draft pick for them. That's just how this works. I think he's being squeezed, but I understand how he's being squeezed. And I feel for him, because it's a very, he's coming off the injury, he misses success, but it's the nature of the business. Mm-hmm. This is the business.
You just said it. That is business. What the Phoenix Suns was a great business move. Players need to look at this league from a organizations need to look at this from a players need to do what's in their best interest. Organizations Phoenix executed that DeAndre restricted free agency to perfection. Because they're able to save a year and 35, right? Because they did it the right way. But you had another team out there that could offer him a max to have leverage. Once you have leverage, all you need is one other team to actually, I would ask is, does Colin Sexton have him the leverage that he needs?
I think the answer right now, as we're talking, it seems like no. It seems like the answer is right. No. Maybe something changes. Maybe they pull the clutch. His agency pulls a rabbit out of their hat. I can't find that rabbit right now. It seems like he's in no man's land, and that could that's where you see the Cavs saying, "Hey, 3 years, $40 million, take it and or leave it." And that seems where we're at. Antonio, thank you so much. Can't wait to hear you on games again this fall. Came to talk to you again soon here on the pod, and thanks again for coming through.
For sure, Chris. Thanks for having me, bro.
All right, thanks again for Antonio Daniels for coming on. We'll be back in a second with Mark Schindler. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Built Bar. If you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you are depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. And guess what? There's a new flavor. Ready? Delicious, indulgent cookie dough covered in chocolate. That's right. Built has done it again. Let me introduce you to your new favorite. That's the cookie dough chunk Built Puffs. They have a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. Cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories, and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein. Run, or type really fast because you can't run on the internet, to Built.com to snag a box for you and the family. It'll be the perfect treat, or you can find a really good hiding place and just hoard them for yourself. Like all Built Bars, the new cookie dough chunk puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. What's great about Built is that all of their bars are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. Eat something that tastes good and is good for you. You're going to love the new cookie dough chunk puff. Whether you need a snack for your workout, a late night treat, or just grab a quick protein-filled bite, Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. Ditch the calories, the fat, and the sugar, and grab yourself a Built bar. Go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and get 15% off your order. Again, the promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off your order at Built.com. All right, last two segments of the day here in Lockdown Cavs. Special guest, Mark Schindler from Diamond Up Rocks. Writes for the WNBA, a bunch of other places. Mark, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm good. I just got back from a trip, so I'm. It feels like everything's like rushing in at once. Like I'm ready to kind of chill, but I'm also very ready to talk about Colin Sexton and the Cleveland Cavaliers. But no, I'm good, man. How are you doing, Chris?
You know, doing good. We're here today to talk about the basketball side of this Colin Sexton discussion because, Mark, I think this happens with basketball stuff a lot, and I understand how it does. We get so tied up in the money and the drama and all this stuff. I think it's just worth pulling back here to really talk about Colin in a purely basketball sense. And I want to start with asking you a pretty broad question. That is, I think we can make educated guesses about what it looks like, but his injury last year, I think, puts a big hole in our knowledge here. What is Colin Sexton in a world where Darius Garland is an all-star and just got this big contract, is the face of the franchise, Evan Mobley is around, Jared Allen had a really nice year last year, not just as a role guy, but had a little post-up game as well. Caris LeVert is on this team now. There's a lot of other guys. Now, it's a different situation than Colin had his first 3 years in the league when he was largely the engine of the Cavs' not-so-good offenses. So what is Colin Sexton in this context? I don't think we know, really, is the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what makes it so difficult. I think we were really starting to get a better sense. Granted, it was only 11 games before he got injured last year. But I know a lot of people will look at the box scores. And I don't know, you and I talked about this a bunch at the beginning of the year, too. Like, Colin really was starting to find something. The shot wasn't there for him. And I think, like, he's one of the guys who I was very willing to say it was the ball. The ball mm-hmm. change for him definitely seemed to throw him off. But to me, like, I view him as somebody who is just a very high-level off-ball mover, off-ball scorer. Who obviously like could, you know, maybe run some bench units and do some things with the ball in his hands. But ideally, like we saw last year, like so much of what Darius did, I thought was stuff that we wanted to see from Colin. Like obviously not at the same level as a passer, but running, doing tons of stuff off of Jarrett and Evan, because so much of that early offense, like they went to pick and roll a lot more later in the year, but early offense was a ton of like blind pig, you know, running a lot of horns actions and getting guys moving downhill. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I view Colin. But then like you mentioned with Karis, I think that's what really throws a wrench into it and trying to figure out what that looks like. There's a lot to parse out there for sure. But I still view Colin as somebody who, like, clearly as the year went on last year, that's someone that they could have used. I think that the Cavs are pretty aware of that. I mean, just watching, like just having anybody else who could handle the ball a little bit and score would have been pretty useful. A lot to dive in there for sure.
Yeah, the tricky part is, as you said and I've said, it's 11 games. He played 28.7 minutes a game. That would have been a career low. He took 13.7 shots per game. That would have been a career low by a full 3-point percentage. He wasn't shooting threes well. He was only making 1 3 a game on 4.1 attempts. That's under 25%. I don't think that would have held. Maybe it's the ball. Maybe it's just early season struggles. He always seems to have like 1 month a year where he just kind of can't shoot threes, and it's very weird. But like, look at January of his third season, like just couldn't shoot threes for like a month, and then it was like back above 40%. Just a weird kick in his game. Maybe 16 points a game, 2.1 assists. Like, his numbers were down, which makes sense. His usage rate still stayed pretty high, and it felt, Mark, I think it's just like it felt like he was figuring it out, and just like I think he just really probably needed time for us to have like a better picture of this. And I went back and was like looking at some of his best games to date, right? So like, I went back in particular and watched the Nets game where he dropped 42, had the 20 in a row. That's maybe the best distillation of what he'd been, right? Like, so that is a guy who was really comfortable playing downhill, played in the pick and roll, is at the center of what an offense is doing. There's some craft and feel there that I think has developed over his time in the league. In that Nets game, there's a really nice little off one leg elbow jumper hit that he wasn't hitting as a rookie, didn't have in his bag as a rookie. It's just like that's a specific style, and I think as he moved, like we were seeing him have to move away from that. We're like, there might be 3-4 games a season, maybe a playoff game or something, where like Colin gets a chance to do that because they need him to drop a bunch of points. That is just also not going to be the norm for him anymore, and it's just like, okay, like we were seeing that dial turned away from that, and then it just is halted, and now we just like I'm left really wondering like Like, we won't know until training camp. We won't know until we get some game film and stuff. I'm just, like, left wondering, like, okay, what will the Cavs, assuming he's back, right, because he's still a restricted free agent, what will their plan be for him to maximize what he is on offense in a way that doesn't take away from Darius, does not take away from Evan's opportunities to I think, grow in year two? And really, I think there's, if Caris LeVert, let's say it's the starting two, they're probably going to give some stuff to Caris to do. So how does Colin fit into that? And then, down the ride, Ricky Rubio will be back as well. Like, it's going to be a different vibe for Colin, I think, is ultimately where this feels like it has to be headed.
Yeah, I mean, I think we started to see it in those 11 games. Like, him, like, I always think that he'd kind of had, like, some real ability to move off ball, but there is breaking out the way he did, like, just made it more apparent. To me, I think the next logical step and where I think the Cavs, what I do think is most interesting is, like, you know, part of what makes it, the blend between basketball and off-court stuff is like, okay, well, how in conjunction have the two parties been on what Colin's growth is? Like, you know, what they want him to do this next year, what they really wanted him to work on. I don't know. That makes it a little bit more interesting. But like, the biggest thing that I was hoping to see as last year went on, and especially, you know, what I hope to see this year too, taking more stuff off movement. Because like, even though he is a good shooter, most of it's pretty set. Like, he's capable of taking pull-ups. He's capable of doing like one or two combos and getting something off. But for the most part, like, it's other than like lifting from the corners, like, it's not a lot of movement in his shots. I think that's the next step for him, being a guy who's taking 7 or 8 threes a game and finding more comfortability coming off screens, coming off movement and stepping into shots and not needing a gather step, because normally he does have like a little bit of a gather step, especially off the catch. And I think that's totally reasonable for him too, considering like how good his touch is and the way that he has grown as a shooter from when he was at Alabama. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's definitely in the cards for him. I do think it could take some time for that to happen, but like, that also just merges with what the Cavs need. Like, honestly, Ochai Agbaji might be the best movement shooter on the team other than Darius Garland right now.
And I think he is. That's telling.
They tried it with Lowry, but like, Lowry is not like, he can kind of do it. He just doesn't get any kind of separation, so it doesn't really work. So I think the idea is Colin becomes that guy. And I think that's possible, but again, it's just more like how in touch have they been with one another. But in terms of just like pure basketball sense, that's what I really think is what I would like to see happen this next year.
Yeah, I think the 3-point volume just getting turned up. And look, there's a question to be asked here of like, okay, is this a hesitancy thing? Is it a comfort thing? Like, how do you turn that dial appropriately where it makes sense for him? Like, in a way he's comfortable with it, because the potential is there. The percentages would make you think it's there, but he has to also just be willing to turn that dial. So every year of his career, like, from cleaning the glass, 23% of his shots as a rookie from three, 22 the year after, 22, and then 26 last year. Last year, that was in the 8th percentile of wings. That's how cleaning the glass has him classified. The year before, 6th percentile of combo guards. It's never been a thing where he's doing a ton of, but he takes a pretty good chunk of mid-range shots. Last year, the notable thing was that he still took a bunch of mid-range shots, but he took way more shots at the rim and fewer mid-range shots, even though he was still taking a lot of mid-range shots. So it's like he has skewed towards the rim, which is interesting, because I think cutting is really also one of the underrated parts of his game. Mm-hmm. I think about the dunk he had on Wendell Carter Jr. as an example of, like, this is an explosive athlete who can do some damage in space, and how can you maximize that? That feels like a guy where, I was going to bring this up later, but I went back and was like watching some clips of him and Andre Drummond, because at number one, maybe I don't like myself, but number two, Andre Drummond and him had this nice little chemistry where Sexton would just sneak around him after a DHO, and Drummond would look to flip him the pass on the cut through. Like, you could do that stuff with Evan Mobley on second unit, where it's like Sexton and then shooters on the other side, and Mobley is kind of the hub of the playmaking, and you could lean into some of that stuff to really help Sexton grow. I the question I think, Mark, becomes, okay, and you hit on this, what does Colin want? Is I think a big part of this, and we just don't know. And he's getting squeezed, I think, financially right now, but basketball wise, what does he want? What is he comfortable with? These are things I don't think we don't have a good answer to either. I think we can visualize like what the Cavs maybe need from him or want from him. The other side of that question, I think, is perhaps a little bit open at this point.
Yeah, it's tough too. Like, not to sound like I'm like brown nosing, but like, I've always had the opinion of Colin. Like, I think he's gotten the selfish billing. I've never really agreed with that. He's always seemed like somebody, even last year, like, clearly had a smaller, more refined role, but like, he really sold out to try and improve in everything he was doing. Like, granted, bar was low, but the defense was better last year. Like, he really tried to make strides on that, and you could tell, like you mentioned, like, he was really good moving without the ball. The cutting was really impressive. Like, and like you mentioned too, like, just as another aside, if you're not including Jared or Evan, like, Colin's the best athlete on the team, I think, pretty clearly. Like, Isaac has really good stuff laterally and strength-wise, but, like, you know, he doesn't have that vertical pop. He's not quite like that. Colin does. Like, so I do think that adds, like, another interesting element. But so just in terms of speaking on that, I guess it's less that I'm worried about him, like, actually fitting in next year. It's more just, you know, what that work has been like in the offseason. Because just, like, for example, I can't, like, name names, but a friend of mine works with some trainers, and, like, John Wall is one of their clients, and like, he was coming in this year, and one of the biggest focuses they had for him was working on shooting off movement, because he'd never really been somebody who's coming off screens, coming off flares, doing things like that. He'd always been like a good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. The pull-ups, never been there, but don't tell him that. But like, that's what I wonder. Okay, I'm like, okay, is that what Colin is doing this summer? Because if he's not, like, that changes completely what this looks like in the next, like, what actually happens in the season. If that's not what the work is in the offseason, it makes it interesting. But sorry, that's like a whole other aside. No, but that's just kind of more where I'm thinking of with it.
No, it's a very fair place to take it. We're going to get more into that right after this. Just going to do a little quick ad break, and we'll be back to talk a little bit more about how does he, where some of the stuff could come into play. All right, back here on Lockdown Cavs, Chris Manning with guest Mark Schindler. Mark, I think the noting, okay, is he working on coming off of flare screens, pin downs, that kind of stuff. I think that is a good place for him to go because I think even if he's going to get a chance to run some pick and roll, do that kind of stuff, it would seem like, number one, Darius Garland is the hub of this offense. Okay, but mm-hmm. This is Darius Garland's offense in a lot of ways. Caris LeVert would seem to be, and we should talk about him a little bit later because he is going to be part of this discussion as well. It seems like Collins going to have to do some of that stuff. And as you alluded to, like Ochai Agbaji, who has not played an actual NBA game yet, might be the Cavs' best movement shooter. It was the thing he did very cleanly in summer league that stood out for him amid basketball, but that was the thing where it's like, okay, this guy knows how to do this stuff already. The Cavs need this kind of thing. It's like either Agbaji or like Jetty Osman, who JB Bickerstaff does not trust, I think, at all for regular minutes going forward. I mean, and maybe he's the guy who gets moved on if and when they clear the roster spot to bring Colin Sexton back. So I think that's a really good place to do it. And it would seem to also help him fit in, A, number one, as Evan Mobley grows, as Caris LeVert gets his touches, but also like when Ricky Rubio comes back. If Rubio is going to play a similar role, even if it's dialed back to accommodate his age and coming off the ACL as he comes back, that's just going to be a thing that would make Colin fit better with that kind of stuff. Because I just can't, Mark, imagine a world that we're heading in any way here where Colin Sexton is getting the ball in the same way that he's historically, the first 3 years of his career, he really did. And he did a lot of good stuff with it. But I think that dial is, there's just, I said this a lot, there's just no way that's not, I think, getting turned back in a way that we keep seeing based on the 11 games last year, based on just what the team did last year.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's interesting too. Like, I do think that I would really like to see him still get pick and roll opportunities and doing a lot in DHOs. Because, like, if you really think about it, too, like, if you're not counting, like, the bigs, if you're, like, thinking more just in terms of, like, self-created rim attempts, like, Colin is the best rim threat on the team. Yeah. Like, in terms, especially, too, like, he's really good at drawing fouls. Like, that's another thing that, like, obviously they were able to buoy a lot of that during the regular season because of how good Jarrett and Evan were at picking up fouls in a timely fashion. But, like, outside them, they really struggled with foul drawing. So it was like, that's another aspect that I think, like, it's again, like trying to toe the line. But then, like you're mentioning, when you start tying in Ricky and Caris, like, I think Ricky, I was actually really impressed with Ricky's offense last year.
Yeah.
I know we talked about this a bunch too. Him getting injured was like a gut punch because, like, he was like a top 15 pull up three shooter in the league on volume across the first 20 games, which is like the complete inverse of what he's done his entire career. Like, I think he was taking like 3.5 pull-up threes per game and shooting like 35-36%. Like, they absolutely needed that, and he just kind of willed it out of thin air, and it was kind of magic. It was awesome. He couldn't finish shit at the rim, but I mean, that was just like kind of wild to see. I don't expect that to happen again. Like, that just historically, that is not a thing that we've seen from him. He's normally somebody who's going to get sagged off of. What makes it tough with Caris is that Caris is kind of he's kind of the opposite, where he's always been a fine pull-up three shooter, like, but then his catch-and-shoot numbers are pretty bad, like noticeably bad. Luckily, he still gets kind of guarded like a shooter sometimes, but it still just makes the spacing really funky and more just fits into the idea of Caris really is not an off-ball player. Like, honestly, And this is not meant as Caris slander. This is just more like, I think Colin often gets pitched as somebody who can really only play with the ball in his hands. And to me, that's a lot more Caris's mold. Like, if Caris doesn't have the ball in his hands, I don't understand why you have him on your team, to be completely honest. Like, you have him to create. You have him to try and generate some microwave scoring and some potentially some playmaking, depending on how he's reading the court that game. But, again, like, that's – like, if all three of those guys are coming off your bench, that is a very odd blend to figure out. Like, on one hand, good that they have that many ball handlers because last year that was a problem. Shout out Brandon Goodwin. He tried his best, but like, it's still, especially for what the team's goals are going to be this year, it does make it a little bit more murky to me.
Yeah, I think it would seem right now that if I had to guess, LeVert's probably going to start, which I can understand. Mm-hmm. I think just putting another ball handler on the floor with Darius Garland to reduce some of his workload makes some sense to me. And I understand why it might not be Colin, because I think you want the size, in theory, like the bigger creator type, to kind of make some of that work and have someone that can maybe see over the defenses a little bit as well. And I think like there's some idea like, okay, Colin comes in, he can provide his punch, he can... you can pair him with certain starters. You know, I think him and, you know, I know there's maybe some historical friction, at least how it's reported, but like him and Kevin could do some interesting stuff in terms of DHOs and some pick and pop stuff that I think could really make some reads simple for Colin. Of course, this just assumes he's back. And that's the part of it we're not really going to hit on today because we've hit on it enough. But there's like a clear way where I think you could see this making sense. I think it is curious to see, it will be curious to see, Mark, like what the plan will be and like how they decide to deploy him, because I think there's like a clear need for some of the stuff he does. It is also just like, okay, like what stuff do they choose to lean into? What stuff do they not? And like, how much do they trust some of the, maybe some of the growth as a passer that we've seen, maybe not the same level of passing guys open or creating really easy dunks for Jared Allen in the same way, but a guy who can operate out of pick and roll, has a pull-up game he can go to, can make some reads out of those situations. Like, there is some stuff there you can do some stuff with. It'll be curious to me to see, like, how they decide to do that, and then also, like, you know, who do they pair him with? What does this rotation ultimately look like? Let's just say it's Darius, Karis, Lowry, Mobley, Allen as the five, right? So then you got Colin, Ricky Rubio, once he comes back from injury, Isaac Okoro, Ochai Agbaji, Kevin Love. That's 10 guys right there, you know, and you
have Dean Wade, erasure, yeah.
Look, Dean Wade, Lamar Steven, like Robin Lopez, the hopeful Cedar Point King. Like, you have some, there's some stylistic choices that Colin will, what Colin's role looks like, I think will be a part of like how they decide to deploy some of the stuff and what kind of basketball they want to play.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a great point. And I think, I mean, just in terms of Karis, if you want to have like more of the Karis conversation now, like I think what just makes it tough too is like, again, I think it's less about skill overlap, but more, I just feel like Colin does a lot of things that they're maybe viewing Karis as doing better. Like, I don't think that Colin clearly doesn't have the same level of passing vision, but also what's tough with Karis is like his passing vision is kind of like he can really, he's really good at creating advantages at times, but then he's also very good at squandering them. Like he has a really rough penchant for, you know, driving and pulling up from 6 feet instead of, you know, taking an extra step to the inside when he has the space and taking a layup, or, you know, a lot of the passes that he will throw are kind of grenades. Like, not to say that it totally cheapens the value, but like, it is not like a Darius assist or a Rubio assist. Like, this is a, okay, the shot's not available anymore, so I'm throwing the ball. Like, and again, that's not at all to mean like he's selfish or anything like that, but it's just, that's how he plays and sees the game for the most part. And I think that played out pretty clean, not to the same level it did with the Pacers, but I do think that played out quite a bit with the Cavs last year. Like, you will have games where he really goes off and the pull-up is working, but if the pull-up isn't working, it's interesting because, okay, if your pull-up isn't there and it's not making the defense care, then who's open? And what's happening if the shot isn't going up? You're just resetting, and then you're probably doing the same thing over again. So it's just, again, like trying to actually construct what the offense is going to look like. And it's part of what makes me just wish we could watch them play right now, so I actually have an answer for how they want to do some of these things rather than just conjecture. But because with Colin, at least, like, I still think, like, honestly, I think Colin's a better passer than he normally gets made out to be. Like, again, not a great passer, but especially like we saw last year, like when he gets to the interior, he's good at making dump offs. He's good at seeing the big. It's not always perfect, but I think for the most part, he's pretty consistent in his reads. They're going to be basic, but he creates quite a lot of space and he's an actual threat at the rim. So it just, again, it just makes it really interesting.
Yeah, I think the rim pressure thing is, it's like it sometimes results in maybe like the shot attempt sometimes can be a little off, but he has a situation where he can actually like put pressure on the rim and generate force, and like, because his speed allows him to get there. Mark, we'll end on this last question. Let's just say Colin re-signs some kind of contract with the Cavs above the, let's just say it's above the 3 for $40 that is kind of reported out there for him right now. Mm-hmm. Could you, with Caris LeVert also in the last year of his contract, can you see a world where both of them are signed beyond this upcoming season?
I think I'm going to say no, honestly.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, not to drag it out too much, but I will say, like, I understand a lot of the time where people come from with Colin saying, like, oh, like, I think he should just be a bench scorer and this and that. But also, just based on what he did his first couple seasons, like, that is a guy that I do think is going to continue to get shots to become a starting player in the league. Like, I know, like, honestly, if the injury hadn't happened, which big if, obviously, I do think that we're talking a lot differently about what his market is. Like, yes, you can say whatever you want about smaller two guards being less, but I think I just look at it more so in, like, okay, averaging 24 points per game on solid efficiency, that's not super common. Like, you're not going to get a lot of guys who come into the league and then are just automatically squared into six-man roles. And clearly, Colin views himself as being more. I think, again, the injury, like, if he doesn't get injured, I'm very curious to see how this is playing out. Like, mm-hmm. Again, that changes everything, but, like, I mean, the Caris trade probably doesn't happen, but, like, so, again, I'm doing way too much mental math, but, like, clearly this is, like, he's if I remember correctly, he wanted, like, north of $100 million before he got injured.
Yeah, at least around 20 plus was the reported number for him.
Yeah, and, like, again, like, I'm not saying that you have to pay that as an organization, but I get where he's coming from. You know, like, I average 24 points per game. Like, I'm a good scorer, and he is a good scorer. So, like, it is a long story short, the answer is no, because I don't really think they fit super well together as players, and B, neither of them want to come off the bench. Like, part of the reason Caris moved from Brooklyn is he didn't, I mean, like, obviously it was part of the Durant trade, but, like, he was not very happy to come off the bench. And especially, you know, with him in Indiana, like, part of the reason he was, he was there to get his game off a little bit. Like, you know, I think both guys that clearly do not want to be coming off the bench. So it makes it interesting. I've said that 1,000 times on this podcast, but it's true. It's just, I think the Cavs are really interesting this next year.
Yeah, this is going to be a very fascinating thing to watch. It's this Colin Sexton thing is very much stuck in neutral right now. And I think once we see the contract, once we see what his role will be, I think we're going to hit some gas here on what some of this looks like, because I think the reality of their situation, the reality of them trying to raise their level this year is going to accelerate some things. And that's a fun place for us to be at and think about. It'll perhaps lead to some stressful moments for the team themselves or people who are very, very invested in this team and perhaps are doing lots of tweeting and things. But I think from a just purely like evaluating this from a basketball perspective, I think when they put their foot on the gas on some of this stuff, I think it's a really interesting mark. Thanks so much for coming on. People gave him a follow at @MG_Schindler on Twitter. Anything you want to plug that you got coming up, got going on before we say goodbye?
I have like a million things going on, so I'll just say follow me on Twitter. I have a Patreon as well. If you enjoy my work, I'm pretty active there too. So I'm still, you know, I work in basketball full time. Getting paid full time is a different story. So I'm trying to make it work. But no, I appreciate you for having me on, man. It's always fun to talk, Chris.
Yeah, we'll have you back on. Do some more Cavsy things as the season gets closer. Some deep dives into some tactics and things once we get some actual basketball, which I'm ready for. I'm also not ready for because I would like a little more time to just like relax and
get adequate. Yeah,
adequate sleep is good. You know, adequate
sounds
sleep.
Nice, yeah.
Adequate sleep is a joy. All right, we'll be back on Monday. Evan will be back from his vacation. We'll be diving into some Cavs questions that we have coming up. Here's the tease. I'm pulling up my actual list that I made earlier today. Here's a couple of the questions we're going to answer in August to start previewing the season. Number one, who starts at the two? Number two, what does Evan Mobley's offensive level looks like? And number three, what is Isaac Okoro's offense in year three? I think that's what we're going to cover next week. If it's not, it'll be the next week. Until next time, I'm Chris. This has been Mark. Evan's back soon. Evan, if you listen to this all the way through, and I don't think you did, text us, let us know, and be well, everybody.